Welcome. We open a new chapter this time in the Yoga of Integral Knowledge. This is chapter 26, Samadhi. It appeared in the journal Arya on 15 January 1918. In 1932, Sri Aurobindo lightly revised it. This and the next couple of chapters will wrap up our study of yoga in the light of knowledge. Samadhi is of particular interest because you'll know that Sri Aurobindo was Bengali. And one of the great figures in the 19th century, whose radiance spilled well into the 20th century, was Sri Ramakrishna, whose experience of various planes of samadhi is legendary. We see here that Sri Aurobindo has frequent reference to material that appears in the school of Raja Yoga, as commonly understood to be the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. So we will be going a step at a time through these various elements. Let's begin. Intimately connected with the aim of the yoga of knowledge, which must always be the growth, the ascent, or the withdrawal into a higher or a divine consciousness, not now normal to us, is the importance attached to the phenomenon of yogic trance, to samadhi, which means making the mind equal, unperturbed, dwelling, as it were, within itself, within the field of consciousness. We'll expand upon the definition as we go. It is supposed that there are states of being which can only be gained in trance. That especially is to be desired in which all action of awareness is abolished, and there is no consciousness at all except the pure supramental immersion in immobile, timeless, and infinite being. This is a reference to that state of awareness in which there is no subject, there is no object. No awareness can be when there is nothing to contemplate. This is the thing which is beyond all the modes and changes of time. It is nirvikalpa. This is a state of samadhi which Sri Ramakrishna could routinely absorb himself into and heroically return to the world from it without diminution, without suffering. We'll see why that's unusual as we go along. I do note that Sri Aurobindo uses the term here, supramental, and he kept it when he revised. Of course, the supramental consciousness, as he described it in The Life Divine, is the capacity of the divine awareness to take the oneness of its being and to distribute it into many-sided harmonic action without losing the integrity of that being. So the one could become many, the silent, unnameable one could become the all, and each individual within the all, representing the one, was indeed a truth of being. For Sri Aurobindo to refer to this supramental immersion in immobile, timeless, and infinite being, we leave uncommented upon. By passing away in this trance, the soul departs into the silence of the highest nirvana without possibility of return into any illusory or inferior state of existence. Nirvana means literally blowing out. Samadhi is not so all important in the yoga of devotion, but it still has its place there as the swoon of being into which the ecstasy of divine love casts the soul. So clearly, samadhi means immersion of being, and here he's beginning with the traditional definition of the yoga of knowledge. This is not the fulsome definition to the supramental that he would bring. This is simply restating for us what is the commonplace in jnana yoga. But it is interesting that samadhi is not something unique to the yoga of knowledge, but this sense of absorption into the arms of the divine beloved is another form of the same thing. It is a refusal to attend to the outward and become intent on the inward. And that communion, if not union, between lover and beloved is all that's about. Back to samadhi. To enter into it is the supreme step of the ladder of yogic practice in Raja Yoga and Hatha Yoga. Yes, both Raja Yoga and Hatha Yoga have as the pinnacle of their ladder of being this immersion into the unnameable truth in which one sits entirely undisturbed and motionless. What then is the nature of samadhi, or the utility of its trance in an integral yoga? It is evident that where our objective includes the possession of the divine in life, a state of cessation of life cannot be the last consummating step or the highest desirable condition. Yogic trance cannot be an aim, as in so many yogic systems, but only a means, and a means not of escape from the waking existence, but to enlarge and raise the whole seeing, living, and active consciousness. The importance of samadhi rests upon the truth which modern knowledge is rediscovering, but which has never been lost in Indian psychology, that only a small part, whether of world being or of our own being, comes into our ken or into our action. And here it's worth noting that this is indeed a very long history, because these terms occur in the very earliest Upanishads, in the Brihadaranyaka, in the fourth section, the third chapter. Virtually the whole of the versification is conjoined to this topic, in which Yajnavalkya is giving instruction to the king, Janaka. Also note that in the Chandogya Upanishad, which is almost as old as the Brihadaranyaka, chapter 6, section 8, and again chapter 8, section 6 through 12, deal with these same subjects. Much of it, Prajapati, the creator of the worlds, giving instruction to Indra, who is going to be the king of the gods, and do Prajapati's work for him. But to do that work well, he has to understand what the ladder of existence is. So those two old great Upanishads, and as we'll see momentarily, there's of course the Mandukya. We'll deal with that. But a younger Upanishad than the Brihadaranyaka or the Chandogya is the Maitri Upanishad, which gives us hundreds of years earlier than the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, a scheme which embraces pranayama, pratyahara, dhyana, dharana, tarka, and samadhi, all the various elements that go into the inner concentration that leads one into identity with that which one seeks. So, Brihadaranyaka, Chandogya, and Maitri. Let's make notes of those. Should we, while we're on it, go ahead and talk about the elements of the yoga, the Eightfold Yoga, as described in the Yoga Sutras, where we begin with the preliminaries, yama to restrain and niyama to encourage and develop assets, which then deliver us after we've worked on self-restraint and on encouraging social good, we begin to sit in asana. We then begin to breathe well in pranayama. We draw our attention away from the senses, away from the external world with pratyahara. We concentrate this gathered consciousness with dharana. We begin to dwell completely within this envelopment of a concentrated state in dhyana, meditation. And then we move from state to state in which we improve, first with the support of objects of consciousness in sampragnyata samadhi, vitarka, vichara, ananda, asmita, and arrive at that sea, that oceanic consciousness, which is entirely engulfing and erases all distinction begun between the self and the object. That is consciousness without support, asampragnyata. That samadhi is the final goal in the Yoga Sutras. From that, one does not return. Or at least the commentaries have it as such. And yet we have the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, who must have recorded it at some point, so he did return. Let's go back to the beginning of this paragraph again. The importance of samadhi rests upon the truth which modern knowledge is rediscovering, but which has never been lost in Indian psychology, that only a small part, whether of world being or of our own being, comes into our ken or into our action. The rest is hidden behind in subliminal reaches of being which descend into the profoundest depths of the subconscient and rise to highest peaks of superconscience, or which surround the little field of our waking life with a wide circumconscient existence of which our mind and sense catch only a few indications. So this one being is tall. It stretches into the superconscient. It is deep. It stretches into the subconscient and even below into the inconscient. It is wide. All the universe is only a figuring of its being, a small denotation of what it might become, because it can become endlessly, powerfully. The old Indian psychology expressed this fact by dividing consciousness into three provinces: waking state, dream state, sleep state, jagrat, svapna, sushupti. And it is supposed in the human being, a waking self, a dream self, a sleep self, with the supreme or absolute self of being, the fourth or Turiya, beyond of which all these are derivations for the enjoyment of relative experience in the world. So this is the worldview, or the states of conscious being, as described in the Mandukya Upanishad. All those 12 verses deal with this. Turiya, of course, in the Mandukya, it's the Chaturtha, the fourth state, is the absolute, that state in which one finds the dissolution, not to be the only and final truth, but that which includes all the other three. Because if the waking state we leave behind and discover the conceptive dream state of the Creator in the mind and vital planes, then in that third state, that state of deep sleep, that is where subject and object are erased. But that fourth state includes that supreme non-awareness and the creative awareness and the waking awareness by intent, not by accident. The divine does nothing by accident. The divine is full of conscious being which executes its will. This is, of course, the reality of what Om represents. A, representing the Jagrat state. The U, representing Swapna. The M, representing Sushupti. And that drone sound, Om, that drone that combines all of the other sounds within its own being. That's the integral divine. So Sri Aurobindo continues. If we examine the phraseology of the old books, we shall find that the waking state is the consciousness of the material universe, which we normally possess in this embodied existence, dominated by the physical mind. The dream state is a consciousness corresponding to the subtler life plane and mind plane behind, which to us, even when we get intimations of them, have not the same concrete reality as the things of the physical existence. The sleep state is a consciousness corresponding to the supramental plane proper to the gnosis, which is beyond our experience, because our causal body or envelope of gnosis is not developed in us, its faculties not active, and therefore we are, in relation to that plane, in a condition of dreamless sleep. The Turiya, beyond, is the consciousness of our pure self-existence, or our absolute being, with which we have no direct relations at all. Whatever mental reflections we may receive in our dream or our waking, or even irrecoverably in our sleep consciousness. This fourfold scale corresponds to the degrees of the ladder of being by which we climb back towards the absolute divine. Normally, therefore, we cannot get back from the physical mind to the higher planes or degrees of consciousness without receiving from the waking state, without going in and away from it, and losing touch with the material world, pratyahara. Hence, to those who desire to have the experience of these higher degrees, trance becomes a desirable thing, a means of escape from the limitations of the physical mind and nature. This is your gate into the interior nature, into the subliminal worlds, being able to close off the externalities, the commanding vibrations of the senses, the perturbations of the mind, the calls of the emotions, and go inside with a purpose, typically seeking either that which emits the mantra or that which embodies the image, the Ishta Devata. Samadhi, or yogic trance, retires to increasing depths according as it draws farther and farther away from the normal or waking state, and enters into degrees of consciousness less and less communicable to the waking mind, and less ready to receive a summons from the waking world. Beyond a certain point, the trance becomes complete, and it is then almost or quite impossible to awaken or call back the soul that has receded into them. It can only come back by its own will, or at most by a violent shock of physical appeal dangerous to the system owing to the abrupt upheaval of return. You may remember that Sri Ramakrishna could instantly be vaulted into Nirvikalpa Samadhi, and one could shake him slowly back into wakefulness, but the one thing that could surely bring him back was that he said, "I have kept a need to have tea. So I use tea time as a means of returning to normal consciousness." So they would bring the tea, and he would come to wakefulness and resume his conversations with those around him. There are said to be supreme states of trance in which the soul, persisting for too long a time, cannot return, for it loses its hold on the cord which binds it to the consciousness of life, and the body is left, maintained indeed in its set position, not dead by dissolution, but incapable of recovering the ensouled life which had inhabited. Finally, the yogin acquires at a certain stage of development the power of abandoning his body definitively without the ordinary phenomena of death by an act of will, iccha mrityu, or by a process of withdrawing the pranic life force through the gate of the upward life current, udnana, opening for it a way through the mystic Brahmarandra in the head. So Udana, there are five breaths. Udana is the one that goes up. It's the upward moving breath. And it penetrates through the lid at the top of the head, which opens one to the infinite, reveals what is beyond in the Sahasrara. And that opening is wide enough then, through the striking of the life force, to allow the departing spirit to ascend into these superconscient planes. This is the command that the departing soul gives to the body. You will stand aside. The life will do my bidding and open this up, and I, in my deeper consciousness, will soar free. By departure from life in the state of samadhi, he attains directly to that higher status of being to which he aspires. In the dream state itself, there are an infinite series of depths. From the lighter, recall is easy, and the world of the physical senses is at the doors, though for the moment shut out. In the deeper, it becomes remote and less able to break in upon the inner absorption. The mind has entered into secure depths of trance. So there we live with little to answer to the body, because it has been effectively closed down. It waits. There is a complete difference between samadhi and normal sleep, between the dream state of yoga and the physical state of dream. Huh. Sleep science now. The latter belongs to the physical mind. In the former, the mind proper and subtle is at work, liberated from the immixture of the physical mentality. So when we have consciously risen into swapna consciousness, we are no longer chained to the body, but it is not the physical mind which is sleeping. We have entered into those realms superior to the plane of matter, in which we can move and dwell and experience broadly. The dreams of the physical mind are an incoherent jumble, made up partly of responses to vague touches from the physical world round, which the lower mind faculties, disconnected from the will and reason, the buddhi, weave a web of wandering fantasy, partly of disordered associations from the brain memory, partly of reflections from the soul traveling on the mental plane, reflections which are ordinarily received without intelligence or coordination, wildly distorted in the reception and mixed up confusedly with the other dream elements, with brain memories and fantastic responses to any sensory touch from the physical world. And you'll, in your reading of Sri Aurobindo's Record of Yoga, find that he makes many references to dream states and experiences and relationships between the dream self in a particular dream and the reality of his being in the here and now. In the yogic dream state, on the other hand, the mind is in clear possession of itself, though not of the physical world, works coherently and is able to use either its ordinary will and intelligence with a concentrated power, or else the higher will and intelligence of the more exalted planes of mind. So herein, one can see the possibilities of using the dream state as an extended field for the practice of yoga. Because here is the awareness of one who seemingly is in the dream world, but not asleep, and who can move through these subliminal worlds with a force, with a will. What would a yogin be doing there but gathering experience, digesting it, the rasa, leading to further growth, to a further extension of yogic experience, to the soul's connection with the interior worlds, with the freedom to move in them, to master them, to be sovereign. It withdraws from experience of the outer world. It puts its seals upon the physical senses and their doors of communication with material things. But everything that is proper to itself, thought, reasoning, reflection, vision, it can continue to execute with an increased purity and power of sovereign concentration, free from the distractions and unsteadiness of the waking mind. It can use, too, its will and produce upon itself or upon its environment mental, moral, and even physical effects which may continue and have their after consequences on the waking state subsequent to the cessation of the trance. So in other words, experience and powers gained effulgently on the inner planes can be pressed into service in the waiting body consciousness below, so that things which might be difficult to attain from the level of the physical consciousness as it engages in the yoga can be affected from above, precipitated from above by the soul mastering the powers and ranges of consciousness in these superior planes, the plane of prana, the plane of manas, of life and mind. One can turn those things around and pour them funnel-like down into the body. To arrive at full possession of the powers of the dream state, it is necessary first to exclude the attack of the sights, sounds, etc., of the outer world upon the physical organs. This is pratyahara. It is quite possible indeed to be aware in the dream trance of the outer physical world through the subtle senses which belong to the subtle body. One may be aware of them just so far as one chooses and on a much wider scale than in the waking condition. For the subtle senses have a far more powerful range than the gross physical organs, a range which may be made practically unlimited. This is, of course, something that in tantric practice is a commonplace. But this awareness of the physical world through the subtle senses is something quite different from our normal awareness of it through the physical organs. The latter is incompatible with the settled state of trance, for the pressure of the physical senses breaks the samadhi and calls back the mind to live in their normal field where alone they have power. So this is the gravid condition of the human being. We don't have the capacity to stay in this higher state, but our lower nature calls us back again and again and again. And something in us, which is retrograde, continues to answer, at least until we have trained it thoroughly, to sit complete in that state of concentration. But the subtle senses have power both upon their own planes and upon the physical world, though this is to them more remote than their own world of being. In yoga, various devices are used to seal up the doors of the physical sense, some of them physical devices. But the one all-sufficient means is a force of concentration by which the mind is drawn inward to depths where the call of physical things can no longer easily attain to it. This is dharana. So we begin with the various restraints and injunctions. We sit in a state of immobility and calm the body, isolated from unnecessary movement. We control the flow of our life breath so that the emotions and the passions calm down. We then look at the mind and pull its attention away from the calls of the senses and away from the command of the emotions and this nature of our habitual thoughts. And then that growing inwardness we cultivate, it becomes dharana, and we become settled and resolute. A second necessity is to get rid of the intervention of physical sleep. The ordinary habit of the mind when it goes in, away from contact with physical things, is to fall into the torpor of sleep or its dreams, and therefore, when called in for the purposes of samadhi, it gives or tends to give at the first chance by sheer force of habit, not the response demanded, but its usual response of physical slumber. And this is, of course, what people typically have encountered as they begin to meditate. The first thing they do is fall asleep. and you hear them in the meditation halls snoring. Well, just keep pressing forward. You won't always go to sleep when you sit to meditate. This habit of the mind has to be got rid of. The mind has to learn to be awake in the dream state, in possession of itself, not with the outgoing, but with an ingathered wakefulness in which, though immersed in itself, it exercises all its powers. So you'll remember this passage from Sri Aurobindo's Savitri, where he is on a great quest. And then he looks back. But now all seemed a vainly teeming vast, upheld by a deluded energy, to a spectator self-absorbed and mute, careless of the unmeaning show he watched, regarding the bizarre procession pass like one who waits for an expected end. He saw a world that is from a world to be. There he divined rather than saw or felt, far off upon the rim of consciousness. Transient and frail, this little whirling globe, and on it left like a lost dream's vain mold, a fragile copy of the spirit's shell, his body gathered into mystic sleep. A foreign shape it seemed, a mythic shade. So, I think this would be an excellent place to put our bookmark this time. And we'll finish our chapter on samadhi in our next meeting and move forward in the yoga of integral knowledge. By the way, just to mention now, so that we know where we're going as a group, when we've completed the yoga of integral knowledge, we will take up the yoga of divine love. Because why wouldn't we? But then, after we finish the yoga of divine love, since the yoga of self-perfection was itself left unfinished, we'll turn probably to Essays on the Gita and have a good long study of Sri Aurobindo's treatment on that grand synthesis of the three yogas, knowledge, works, and love. I thought we could read a longer section from Savitri tonight. This would be in Book 7, the Book of Yoga, Canto 6, Nirvana and the All-Negating Absolute. Then even those stirrings rose in her no more. Her mind now seemed like a vast empty room, or like a peaceful landscape without sound. This men call quietude and prize as peace. But to her deeper sight, all yet was there, effervescing like a chaos under a lid. Feelings and thoughts cried out for word and act, but found no response in the silenced brain. All was suppressed, but nothing yet expunged. At every moment might explosion come. Then this too paused. The body seemed a stone. All now was a wide, mighty vacancy, but still excluded from eternity's hush. For still was far the repose of the Absolute and the ocean silence of infinity. Even now some thoughts could cross her solitude. These surged not from the depths or from within, cast up from formlessness to seek a form, spoke not the body's need nor voiced life's call. These seemed not born nor made in human time. Children of cosmic nature from a far world, ideas, shapes, in complete armor of words, posted like travelers in an alien space. Out of some far expanse they seemed to come, as if carried on vast wings like large white sails, and with easy access reached the inner ear, as though they used a natural privileged right to the high royal entries of the soul. As yet their path lay deep concealed in light. Then, looking to know whence the intruders came, she saw a spiritual immensity, pervading and encompassing the world space, as ether, our transparent, tangible air, and through it sailing tranquilly a thought. As smoothly glides a ship nearing its port, ignorant of embargo and blockade, confident of entrance and the visa's seal, it came to the silent city of the brain, towards its accustomed and expectant key, but met a barring will, a blow of force, and sank, vanishing in the immensity. After a long vacant pause, another appeared, and others, one by one, suddenly emerged, minds, unexpected visitors from the unseen, like far-off sails upon a lonely sea. But soon that commerce failed. None reached mind's coast. Then all grew still. Nothing moved anymore. Immobile, self-wrapped, timeless, solitary. A silent spirit pervaded silent space. Pages 543 to 544. So, namaste, Jai Ma.